I'm also processing my peanut butter that I just guzzled. Guzzled?
Boy, oh boy, buddy.
As opposed to doing empty stomach and being hella, just like hangry the entire time.
That has been a vibe of some of our podcasts.
It's been the, I know, that's been my energy for numerous episodes.
I'll tell you what, there have been a couple of episodes that we've recorded while I was on my period.
Oh my God,
and
Aubrey.
They are so apparent to me. I'm like, hey, ease the fuck up on Halo Top,
yeah,
dude.
Tone it down.
What did they ever do to you?
What if I said that to you, Aubrey? I can tell you're on your period for this one, Aubrey. You are correct, but that is fucked up. All right, what do you have? What are we diving into?
Do you have one that you feel like you're ready to roll with or no?
This one's bad.
Okay, you can do a bad one and I'll do a bad one. How about that? We both do one.
I'm doing a sports one.
Shit. Uh-oh, it is going
to
be bad.
Welcome to MP, the podcast that delivers W's.
Ha!
That's what they say in sports. In sports.
I like that. That's a good one.
What's yours?
Mine was, hi, everybody, and welcome to Maintenance Phase, the podcast that wants our listeners to know you're the best around.
That's not even a tagline. You just wanted to sing.
No, I did not want to sing, but that's what came to mind when I thought of, like, what's a victory's tagline? And I was like, bleh.
You need to do Eye of the Tiger, just in full, just all 3.5 minutes.
All I know of Eye of the Tiger is, it's the eye of the tiger. It's the thrill of the fight. And then I know nothing.
Dun, dun, dun. I only know the instrumental. I don't even think that's Eye of the Tiger.
I'm Aubrey Gordon.
I'm Michael Hobbs. And today we are doing a victory lap. Oh, there's probably a tagline in that, isn't there? Victory lap. Wait, let me get there.
This is our show now, is you listen to us try and think of catchphrases.
Just the whole show is just going to be workshopping new taglines.
We're doing an episode. We asked you all to send us your victories in fighting anti-fatness, in fighting sort of nutritional misinformation and disinformation. Mm-hmm. And you all came through in a major way. We got almost 300 victories in like a few days.
I have to stop being surprised by this and just start expecting it.
Yeah, that's right.
People are just going to send us lots of stuff. People have thoughts.
So first up, we have one that comes from someone who was anonymous. So I'm going to make up a name for that person, I've decided.
Xerxes.
This one comes from Gerald.
Wolfgang.
Gerald Xerxes Wolfgang writes,
mm-hmm.
My son is attending a school that is well known to be one of the most progressive high schools in Seattle. But the form families need to fill out each year as part of re-enrollment asks for your kid's weight. I wrote admissions and asked about it, and they decided to take it off the form.
Hey,
done.
Asking for stuff. Ask it.
For stuff.
Good job, Gerald.
Right? This one felt really exciting to me because, like, it really is just like, you could just email somebody and be like, hey, why do you do this?
Yeah.
This seems weird. Why? And they're like, oh, whoops, you're right.
Yeah.
It's easy to like build stuff up in our minds that like everything's going to be a big fight and you're going to have to make a big case for it and whatever. And there's also stuff like this where you just go, hey, could we not? And they're like, yeah, yeah, sure.
Yeah, sometimes it's just like no one's asked before or somebody hasn't really thought about like, wait, why is this on the form?
Absolutely.
There was a tweet going around recently that was like, everyone complains about Karens until a flight gets delayed and you all get a $200 voucher. And I feel like there's something to be said for like sometimes you just
being
have to be the person
wheel.
Who's annoying.
I don't know that that's a Karen thing.
It's a loaded term, but still, every once in a while you just got to ask for stuff.
Did you have any like quick and easies that popped up when you were looking through? Like
what
anywhere
were
it was just like kind of one and done like that.
Did you see the one from the person who, when she walks around, every time she sees one of those little free library thingies,
she takes out all the diet books
and destroys them.
We got one. I was going to send it to you. I couldn't find it. And I'm like logged out on this computer. So like garbage, whatever.
Mm.
We got one from someone who was like, I don't know if this is what you're looking for, but my company requires us to log our steps using like a company provided Fitbit.
Mm.
And if we do, we get like free coffee at the coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I figured out how to hack the company provided Fitbits and like have everybody put in a bunch more steps than they were doing and get a bunch of free coffee.
Oh, hell yeah. This is the kind of these are the acts of terrorism that I can get behind.
You and I were talking earlier about how we like categorized different victories to be like, this one's more institutional and this one's more individual. And the category for that one was just mayhem.
Yeah, yeah. Or just like chaotic good.
Yeah, I love it. How about you? Have you got one going?
This one comes from Mercy. She says, yesterday I was uncomfortable in a chair at a restaurant, and instead of just blaming myself, I nonchalantly asked the waiter if they had a different chair as I didn't fit in the existing one. He found one within minutes, no big deal. No panic attacks, no judgment. This was huge for me.
I love this.
People can be nice about this stuff.
Yeah.
It's a perfectly reasonable thing for anybody to ask for. Like, I'm sorry, this doesn't really work for me. Do you have something else? Love it.
Yeah, we had another one from someone who said that their victory was, and I quote, making it awkward.
They're
like, when people ask me, like, oh, you really treated yourself to some first class tickets, huh? This person was like, yeah, I don't know if I can keep my seat if I don't get those.
We got a lot of those kind of like chaos gremlin ones that were just like, yeah, I make it real fucking weird. I'm just constantly being like, don't say that in my presence. I fucking love it.
There was one from someone who was talking to a friend of theirs who was like, I'm dating this girl and she's so hot. She could totally be like a swimsuit model. She's so like thin and beautiful and whatever. And the other person was like, that's fucking weird. Anyone can be a swimsuit model.
Yeah.
You just put on a swimsuit and somebody takes your picture. And the person was like, oh, you're right.
Anyone can get yelled at by Jordan Peterson on the internet. Anyone.
Okay. I have one for you. I'm sort of like moving up the ladder of like how many people are involved in this one.
You have like a you put thought into this. Interesting.
I'm giving us a little crescendo.
Like a little arc.
This is one of my mom ones.
Okay, good. Yeah, I also have like a folder of mom ones.
Great. Let's do some mom ones cuz I do think
mom ones
like
out there.
A lot of this stuff comes from moms, and because of the nature of our relationships with our families, it can be really easy to think that your parents will simply refuse to change on this as they have on like I don't know what, learning to use FaceTime or whatever.
Yeah.
So this one comes from Kate. Kate writes, I started listening to Maintenance Phase mid-lockdown. Within a few weeks, I was catching all those societal thoughts that lived in my brain unquestioned until suddenly I couldn't not notice them anymore. I could find the roots of them in my 90s kid upbringing, but also in a lot of the stuff that my mom has said about her own body over the years. It's been really wonderful that just by sharing my own growth and how I'm getting better at noticing anti-fatness in my own mind, my mom has also shifted her language. She's less shitty to herself and has shared how she calls in her fat friends to be less shitty to themselves and other fat people they know. It's a really nice ripple effect, and the best thing about it is all I did was change my own mind and decide to talk about it. This one felt like a really lovely way in because honestly, this is how a lot of stuff happens for me.
Yeah.
And I find it to be really effective. It's a way of going, hey, I'm reconsidering my actions.
Yeah.
I mean, the number of these that were just people being like, I finally said how I felt about this thing.
Yeah,
and then the person changed is like really sort of through the roof. That's one of the big through lines of all of these victories.
Wait, I have a double mom one.
Ooh, double mom.
This is from my own mom. This is not an email. This is me talking.
What?
That, you know, my mom has been on like a journey with this stuff. And like, that's kind of my origin story with the show too, is like, you know, seeing my mom struggle with this and the way that people treated my mom my whole life. And she is, you know, pretty maintenance phase pilled at this point. And her mom, who's very sort of like silent generation, you know, World War II military wife, very like a lot of policing of food in the home growing up and this kind of stuff. My grandma is now at the place where like, I mean, with like old people, like we do this and we're only 40, but like my grandma's 98 and she tells like the same story over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And like one of the stories that she tells is about how she had these like fat aunts growing up.
Ooh.
It's like my mom's sister was like so big. And like, that's like the whole story.
Just like, what a fat person.
It's just like, these ladies were really fat. And like, I have now been there. When my grandma will start sort of playing this tape about the fat aunts, and my mom will be like, nope, we're not doing the fat aunt story today. Nope, not gonna happen. And then my grandma will be like, no, let me just, like, nope, we're gonna let, like, we let my grandma retell a bunch of other stories. Cause like, whatever, this is how she's like processing stuff. And like her mind isn't as sharp as it used to be. But it's like, my mom is drawing the line in the sand. Like, we're not doing the fat aunts content
anymore. I love this.
Love it. I know, it feels good. It does feel very awkward being there when it happens. But also,
sure,
like, It's my grandma who made it awkward. It's not my mom who made it awkward.
I had an older family member. This was like, I don't know, 15 years ago, maybe 20 years ago. It's been a while. Who had one of those stories where you're like, there's no point to this.
Yeah.
And the story was just like, you know, our neighbor, Sally, just was married to a man. And then she got up one day and decided she was a lesbian. And we've never heard from her again.
Oh,
I think it was a person who'd been telling that story for so long that they just didn't even think about, like,
yeah.
What's the point of it? Why am I telling it? Does this actually reflect how I feel about this issue now?
And also, is this even a story? Does this even qualify as a story?
I don't think there's a middle or an end. And I'm not sure that there's a beginning.
We also got a lot from moms about, like, their daughters.
Yeah.
Can I read one?
Yes, by all means.
This one's from Erin. She says, my teen daughter has a bigger body than her friends, so I arranged to happen to be listening to Is Being Fat Bad for You when taking a car trip in the hopes that it would help prevent or assuage any concern she might have. Her reaction surprised me. Instead of applying the lessons to herself, she reflected on a time when she had a classmate who was the biggest in their grade. She said that while people didn't say anything openly, everyone assumed that they were going to die of being fat. After listening to your show, she now thinks that she and the other children were being mean. She has no idea where the thought that being fat was an immediate death sentence even came from. While she no longer has classes with the person in question, she and her friends have gone on to decide that making personal remarks about people's bodies is not okay.
I love this.
Be nice to people. And also, like, unpacking, like, where did that even come from?
I think there's an even more foundational question here, which is just like, what is the purpose of telling someone they're going to die?
I do feel like some people you can, like, I know that I am going to die being hit on my bike by a self-driving car. I am 100% sure that that is how I'm going to die.
You've seen the stories coming out of the Bay Area.
My last word is going to be like, Elon, no. But then also, I do think there's something funny about, like, the weird confidence that people have. One of the interesting conversations I had with an epidemiologist who, like, disagreed with the show and was like, got in touch with us and was like, you know, it was actually that episode, the Is Being Fat Bad for You episode. And they were like, let me talk about this. I think you misrepresented the science. And we had this conversation. And one of the things they said, which I thought was really interesting, was like, everyone agrees that smoking is really bad for you. Like, smoking is fucking bad for you. It's a behavior. Unlike obesity, it's a behavior, right? Smoking is just, like, straightforwardly bad for you. Only like 50% of people who are habitual smokers die of smoking-related illnesses. Mm. You know, 50% is extremely high. Like, that's as bad as it gets, right? Yeah. But, like, even with something as straightforwardly bad for you as smoking, it isn't as clear-cut as, like, you can look at somebody smoking a cigarette and be like, oh, he's going to die of smoking.
Yes, and even if you could, what is the purpose?
Yeah, it's also pretty fucked up. Yeah.
I have one more mom one.
Ooh, okay.
This one comes from Leah. Leah says, I have a twofold victory. My stepkid and I listened to the first episode of your show while we were on a college road trip last year. It allowed us to talk about body stuff that was both amazing and extremely hard to hear. While they told me how hard it had been to have their mom constantly encourage them to lose weight, something I confessed I had been extremely upset about, they also asked me if I was done dieting. It was only in that moment that I realized that I never had to say anything to my child about their own body to make them feel uncomfortable. They just had to watch how I treated mine. Mm. Owning and accepting this was victory one. Victory two was talking about the experience on stage at a live storytelling event and seeing so many heads nod when I asked rhetorically, what am I telling my child about their body, even without saying a word, when they see me dieting? The story was played on the local radio and included in a local podcast.
Oh,
I love this one.
Yeah, that's really good.
Again, like, I think a part of making change that people don't really think as much about is this idea of, like, not just owning success stories, but also owning where we have fallen short. Mm-hmm. Because in telling stories like that, once again, you're, like, inviting people in to be like, hey, man, I fucked up in this way. What are the ways you fucked up?
Yeah.
That it's just like, we're all on the same plane. We're all being honest and we're doing the warts and all thing. Like, yeah. It invites a kind of reflection that I think is really productive and cool.
Also, there's something too with parenting where, like, there's just this sort of inevitability that, like, you're going to fuck up in one way or another.
Yes.
Which really sucks, because, like, I think everybody sort of goes into it thinking, like, I'm going to correct the mistakes of my parents. Mm. But then parenting is so hard, and there's so much stuff that's unexpected, and so much of it comes down to the specifics of, like, what your kid is like, and, like, the specifics of, you know, the time that you have, et cetera. And so I feel like it's important to, like, kind of show some grace to yourself about the fact that, you know, you're going to fuck up along the way, and also try to have, like, an open conversation with your kids about that, and, like,
yeah,
try to help process it. Like, my parents fucked up too, but we have, like, a super open dialogue about it. Like, we've been talking about this for, like, decades.
Yeah.
They also, I don't know if other people's parents do this, but my parents also do the thing where they'll send me these, like, late night emails, and they'll be like, do you remember, Mike, when you, like, fell off your bike when you were, like, 6 years old and I told you to stop crying?
Oh.
I'm like, that was mean and I shouldn't have done that. I'm like, I have no recollection of this whatsoever.
Oh, that's so sweet and sad.
Yeah, I'm like, I really don't remember that in a genuine, like, these are always from my dad, who's, like, really nice guy, like, very gentle, very sensitive guy. And, like, he remembers, like, the three moments where he, like, wasn't nice.
Oh.
And he feels bad about them. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? But then I remember about, like, things that I did, you know, like, 8 years ago that I'm still cringing about now.
Yeah. Yes.
Like, the minute
yes.
I got on Facebook, I was like, I have to email this person from the eighth grade and apologize for that thing that I said to her that I've been thinking about, like, once a week ever since. And so I have like appreciated that dialogue with my parents about, like, some of the stuff that they fucked up on, they really did fuck up on, and some of the stuff they really didn't, and it's fine.
Yeah, totally. No, my parents have a similar thing. My mom in particular is like, she'll just call me and be like, hey, when you were in that musical in the seventh grade, we were going to look for dress patterns for your costume, and I told you you couldn't have this one because it wouldn't flatter your body type, and I'm so sorry that I said that. And, and I'm like, zero recollection.
Yeah.
But, like, same sort of thing, right? That there is this sort of, like, open dialogue, and then it also opens up space for me to be like, hey, I was a real asshole to you when I was in high school. Like, a real asshole.
Mm.
Again, it just opens up this space for everyone to go, you know what? I've got misgivings of my own. And, like, let's talk about those, right?
I feel like the real power move when your parents open these conversations is to be like, I don't remember that. But what I do remember is the time that you... And just have a list of grievances ready. But what about that other time, Mom?
Just that you just whip your wrist and unroll a giant scroll of, like,
yeah.
Item number 97B.
I love the thing where they reach out their hand with an olive branch and you just slap it out of their hand. You're like, no, this is going to be a negative interaction.
Yeah, that's right. Sometimes you got to do it.
Wait, I have a non mom one.
I'm done with mom ones. That's the end of mom ones.
Okay. So this one is from Tara.
Hello, Tara.
She says, 6-ish months ago, I was on a flight where I was on the aisle with an empty middle seat next to me.
Yeah.
The person on the other side of the aisle was fat and did not have an empty middle seat and did not look comfortable. When the boarding door closed, I offered to swap them seats because I had more room than I needed. They seemed really surprised and gracious of this and took me up on it, grabbed their seatbelt extender, and swapped. At the end of the flight, they stopped me and thanked me again. So this is one that I think is, like, really interesting in that, like, it is a kindness to a stranger, but also, like, reaching out in this way when you don't know the person on the other end of it can also be super condescending and bad if, like, you're not doing it with thought and care.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to hear what you think about this.
I mean, I think this is fucking killer.
Yeah, it's great.
The pitfalls are when you get into, like, awkward over-explaining. It looks like you're really uncomfortable. These seats aren't built for you, are they?
Yeah.
If you just go, hey, do you want to switch seats? And just leave it at that. Like, who among us on an airplane would not be thrilled to get more space?
Well, what I keep thinking about is you talking about how at the gym, how people are like, good for you, which I think is coming from a similar place of, like, people are trying to create a welcoming space for fat people.
Mm-hmm.
But also that can come off as, like, super condescending.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, in the same category of, like, once you become aware of this as an issue, you can, like, tip too far in the direction of being like, welcome here, bestie. I love seeing fat people.
Right. You become the fat people version of the dad from Get Out.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want Tara to think that this is in any way a criticism of her. I'm just
saying,
like,
not at
this
all.
Category of, like, reaching out in charity to other people, like, can get kind of fraught. And that's what I wanted to unpack.
It really can. I mean, I think there are two things that make this different for me. One is there is a material offer happening here.
Yeah.
Right? And it's not a corrective offer. It's not a, hey, if you go to the gym, you could become a thin person.
It's not
a way of veiling a criticism. It's a way of recognizing, like, I bet this is an uncomfortable situation for you.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that makes this different, and this is like a good screening question, I think, for folks, is like, are you doing it for you or are you doing it for them?
Yeah.
And I think the good for you stuff at the gym is a lot of people doing it for themselves so that they can feel like they did a good thing for a fat person. They just want to feel like they did their good deed for a day. It's a little bit like helping an old lady across the street without asking if she needs help. Which has happened to my mom a couple of times. Aww. And she's like, get off. I don't want this. But like, this is a clear case where this person was like, I have a comfortable thing. I don't think I need it as much as you need it. How about we just swap?
I always think about your gym example too, because there is a super fat lady that goes to my gym, and my gym is like super fucking bro-y and awful. And there's all these like burn fat posters around. And like, part of me, like, I would see her, she went at the same time of day as me. And part of me wanted to just like say hi. I ultimately decided not to, because like, I think she might be aware of the fact that like I'm reaching out to the fat person to say hi, and it might make her like more self-conscious, but I still don't really know if that was like the right choice.
Yeah, totally. And I also think like, well, listen, this is gonna tie in pre-show discussion.
Uh-oh, is it about my boy problems?
It's about your boy problems.
Okay.
But like, I think there's a way of like letting that stuff come up organically as it would with other people.
This is about my boy problems, god damn it,
sorry.
Oblique references on the show, just Easter eggs for me and me alone.
Leave it in.
Yeah.
But I think there's like a way of just being like, you know, if they're like struggling with figuring out how machine works, being like, hey, can I help? Or like, this machine sucks, huh? Or like, I hate it when people don't wipe down their machines after they use them, or whatever your thing is, you know? I think there are ways in like that that just feel like, oh, what a nice person that I just met, and not like that person's doing me a favor right now, you know?
That was really insightful. Aubrey, have you thought about this before? You thought about this issue? The way that fat people are related to in society. Interesting. Wow. It's almost as if.
I have one for you that I think is like sticky, but exceedingly well played, and I really like it.
Okay.
This one is an example from someone in the workplace.
Okay.
This one comes from Rowan.
Rowan, take the stairs instead of the elevator.
The number of people who were like, I ripped down all the signs next to the elevators that say we should take the stairs. And I was like, yeah, chaos gremlins.
I love it. Do it.
Rowan writes, I work at a winery behind a tasting bar, and I was providing a tasting to a really nice couple, and we were all getting along really well. I can't remember how we got onto the topic of his best friend, but they told me that they really don't get along with his wife. Normally, when people who've been drinking tell me some deets about their lives, I give them what I refer to as a placation smile and keep it moving. Mm-hmm. But then these folks began describing why they don't enjoy her company. And the very first thing they told me was in reference to the size of her body. And then a detailed explanation about the size of her body, all to the tune of the general idea that if you're going to be in such a large body, how dare you be judgmental of other people?
That's like me throwing drinks on people shit. I hate that shit so fucking much when people just like casually mention that kind of shit.
Yeah. How dare you judge anyone? Look at how disgusting.
It makes
you
me
are.
So fucking mad.
This is part of the reason why I highlighted it, because I was like, this is also drink throwing territory for me. And this person did so well, I think. Rowan writes, we had a pretty good rapport at that time. And my workplace is really supportive of showing up as your true self and not letting guests trounce around as they please. So I said to them, hey guys, it sounds like that woman is a real asshole, but I just want to point out to you that the first details you gave me about her were about the size of her body, and that's just really not a good look for you two.
Good shit.
The conversation went on, and they actually responded really well and seemed receptive. I love it!
Dude, wait, I need both hands. Make it weird.
Oh, that mic stand is paying off.
I know,
off,
paying Michael. Off. $12. I got to do at least 6 more of those.
I have to say, I fucking love how scandalized Twitter was that you didn't have a mic stand.
Yeah, they're like, oh, I can't believe you didn't have a mic stand. Like, what is this? I didn't know I was supposed to have one. I didn't know it was weird to be holding my mic this entire time. Turns out I'm bad at podcasting.
How about you? Were there any that came up on your list of like people interrupting tricky comments.
Okay, dude, I have, speaking of boy problems, did you get the one from Kate? Did you pull that out?
Well, I have two more on my list that are from K-A-T-E and K-A-I-T.
Okay, I'm reading the K-A-I-T one.
Great, do it. I love this one.
She says the name of this person in the email, but it's not clear if she's using a fake name or not. So it's like, just so we're 100% sure, I'm going to use a fake name.
Jeff. We're talking about Jeff. And as long as we're making up names, this is a G-E-O-F.
Oh, God. Jeff. British. It's a British Jeff. There is a boy named Jeff that I've been in a relationship with for around 2 years now. He's a skinny little man from a skinny little family. I talked a bit about your show on our first date, so fat activism and anti-dieting was always a part of our conversations. He is a very kind and open-minded guy, but fat talk wasn't something he had encountered before. One night, over a year into knowing each other, we had a very long, very scary conversation about my weight and my body and how I felt about it and how he felt about it. The basic takeaway was that he wasn't sure he didn't want me to lose weight and wasn't sure he wouldn't be more supportive of that end than me staying the size I am. We decided to give it time, and he promised to look into the things I had learned from you guys. Well, almost a year later now, he has absolutely amazed me with his growth. I gave him a copy of Aubrey's You Just Need to Lose Weight book, and he read the whole thing within the week. We had several discussions, and each had breakthroughs talking about the book. Even more wonderful to me, he started helping a friend of ours who really needed it. The friend had been told by her partner that she was too fat and immediately started a pretty intense diet. I'm pretty bad at evangelizing, but Jeff not only shared facts and studies about the health risks of what she was doing, but kindly helped her realize that her partner wasn't good for her and that she really didn't need to lose weight. It has been amazing to see him grow and change, and it has given me more confidence to share resources and information with my other friends and family and put more boundaries in place. So, good for Kate, good for Jeff. We love seeing growth. G-R-E-O-W-T-H. Growth. For G.
If it's British, there's a U in there too.
Growth. But this one is, I mean, I am reading into this. There does seem to be this like thing among like straight dudes that like a huge number of straight dudes are like into larger ladies and like attracted to like thick, fat women.
Yeah, this is true.
And like their bros give them shit about it. So they're like, well, you should probably lose weight. Like there's this weird thing where it's like, I'm attracted to you, but also like for your health or for whatever, you know, for my boys or whatever, I need you to look different, which is like super fucked up. And so I'm assuming from this that Jeff is like fucking into her. Jeff thinks she's hot as shit, but like he had this kind of ingrained thing of like, oh yeah, I just really need you to lose weight. But like, no, your girlfriend's hot. You're having a nice time. You're attracted to each other. Like, this is just the way that it's going to be. And like, if your fellas give you shit about it, like, fuck your fellas. Find new fellas.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like one of my great joys of looking around society in the last 5 years is how like straight relationships are starting to sort of take on some of the characteristics of gay relationships. And I feel like gay people that I know are just like, I'm just into this thing. And like, fuck you if you're not into it. And like, being into like, I don't know, dudes with body hair, like fat dudes or short dudes or whatever, like that's dope and you're fucking missing out.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's like the way that straight dudes that are into fat women like need to be.
I am like completely in that camp with you. I will say there are dudes who think they're doing this and are being utter total creeps.
Yeah, it's you gotta draw the line between that and like weird like fetishization and like being fucking weird about it. Yes.
Yeah, totally. And like consent is really important. Make sure you have consent for whatever you're doing and saying and all that kind of stuff. But like, yeah, man, if you are in a loving relationship with someone and you think they're fucking hot, even if other people around them don't, and maybe especially if other people around them don't, be fucking loud about that shit. I love it. That's great.
Yeah.
I would like to offer a potential next project for Jeff.
Okay.
For Geoff.
Geoff.
Look at your boys. Look at your group of your boys, your best buds, and think about who in that group is likeliest to make those kinds of remarks. Mm. I think there is this temptation to reach out to fat people after they've experienced horrible fat shaming, or reach out to people who've been through terrible relationships with garbage people after they've been through terrible relationships with garbage people. And there is a slightly more upstream way for us all to do that, which is think about the people in your life who are most likely to be garbage people to other people on the basis of their size.
Reduce the supply of garbage rather than the demand for garbage. I like it.
Absolutely. Like I right now can think of three people in my life who have like challenges in this area.
Yeah.
I think it's worth thinking about like, rather than just like cleaning up the damage after it happens, like how do we prevent the damage?
Also, it's so interesting to me how many of these victories are really just about like setting explicit boundaries of like, I'm going to be this size. This is the size that I am. Or like, we're not going to talk about this anymore.
Yeah.
This makes me feel bad when you do this. And like, you can do whatever you want with that information. Like, I'm not forcing you to do anything. But like, when we have this conversation, it makes me feel like this. I think that's something that as like a conflict averse person, like I find that really challenging. And one of the things I learned from living in Northern Europe for so long, where everyone is mean, is that you can just like say stuff and it's okay to sort of throw in those little boundary setting things. Without, it doesn't mean that like the whole relationship is going to be fucking weird now.
Yeah.
I feel like as Americans, there's this kind of like smile and nod kind of thing. And it can be really hard to like kind of push those things, but it really isn't the end of the world.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's right. Listen, I'm a white lady from a white family in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
Like boy, oh boy, the amount of swallowing feelings that happens in that sort of particular constellation is a lot.
Yeah.
Have one. Do you have any from healthcare providers? I have a really good one from a healthcare provider.
I have a couple ones from healthcare providers. I have one in the category of males that made us feel weird. I always enjoy.
I have one that is just straightforwardly like, I would recommend this.
Ooh,
this is good.
Do it.
Heather writes, I am a healthcare provider and my victory is changing the way I talk to people about their bodies and weight. I put together a short questionnaire about 5 years ago after reading Michael's Everything We Know About Obesity Is Wrong article that put even having the discussion in the patient's hands, using just three questions that ask how they feel in their body and whether it's a topic they want to discuss.
Oh.
If they mark no, I don't bring it up at all. And if they mark yes, I let them guide the conversation. The third question is whether they're interested in a discussion about food, activity, or both. I've changed the whole office's health history forms further to ask if people have ever experienced disordered eating and or have avoided healthcare providers because of how their weight has been addressed. It has been so amazing to see my patients feel like people and not just a fat body that needs to be fixed. I've had so much positive feedback from fat patients who have expressed finally feeling heard or listened to, and it feels like a huge victory that they can feel dignified and respected in a healthcare setting.
Incredible.
I have no notes. I think this is like above and beyond anything I have experienced in a healthcare provider's office. It's incredible.
The funny thing is, it is at the same time both above and beyond and like such a low bar.
It is the lowest bar.
I'm not in any way trying to take this away from Heather, and it's like really, really, really cool. But also it's like, this should not be too much to fucking ask.
Right.
Ask me about my health. Whether like I've struggled with an eating disorder, like one of the most common things in America, especially among women, like ask me that shit before you give me fucking tedious weight loss advice. I don't think we're shooting for the fucking moon. And yet, like 99% of the U.S. healthcare system like refuses to consider this approach.
Right. I mean, I think this is like 20% of the victories were just people being like, I refused to be weighed and this person was a dick about it. So
here's what
I said to the person who's being a dick.
It's like, holy shit, this person might have some like body issues. Body issues?
Right.
Something that like 90% of the population has?
What I love about this thing from Heather is that it's a quick, light touch way of the healthcare provider getting the information that they need, the patient being able to write something down or check a box and not having to like plumb the depths of their trauma. Like every time I see a new healthcare provider, I have like a monologue that I prepare.
Yeah.
Here's all the shit, and I need you not to do these things. It has been a horror show for me to get here. Please don't fuck it up for me. Don't make it harder for me to come back.
Yeah, you're like clenched expecting like this horrible experience, which is not conducive to like a productive healthcare relationship. Like this is not making people healthier on like a broad scale.
Yes. And it also makes my blood pressure readings totally whack.
I get the same things that mine is too low because I always bike there and I'm like panting and sweating. And I'm like, are you dead? It says that you're dead.
But like, this just seemed like a really easy way for folks in a no pressure, like no one's asking a question. You don't have to come up with an answer in the moment, right? Like you get to just fill out a form. You can come back to it later if you want to and fill out the rest of the form, right? Like all of this is like such a low pressure, lightweight, easy way of handling all of this that I'm just like, good work, Heather. And I would say to other healthcare providers, if you are looking for a place to start,
yeah,
this
really
is a pretty killer place to start.
Dude, a Michael Hobbs doctor visit update.
Mm.
As you know, I have a wax skeleton and I also have this like carpal tunnel thing. And I went in yesterday for my carpal tunnel and they like went to weigh me. And I was like, oh, no, you know, I prefer not to be weighed. And then they like looked at my chart and they were like, oh, so like you're still at around 150. And so somewhere in all of these interactions with the healthcare system, all of which I have refused to be weighed, someone wrote down what they estimated my weight to be.
I hate this.
They pulled a fucking number out of thin air and now it's like on my chart.
I hate this.
I genuinely do not know or care how much I weigh. I don't know if 150 is like way over or way under. No idea. But it's like, it's fucking wild that like they just wrote a fucking number. They're like, this guy looks around 150. What the fuck?
Oh, did I tell you? So my mom has gotten completely on the train of like, I refuse to be weighed all the time.
Fuck yeah.
She's like, I'm 75.
Fuck yeah.
I don't have the fucking time for this garbage. Let's go.
Love
I'm
it.
Done.
Love it.
She rolled into the doctor's office at one point for a visit and they asked to weigh her. And she was like, oh, I don't do that.
Hell yeah.
That's what she said. I don't do that. I just imagine the like deal with it, like 8-bit glasses, yeah, just like descending. I don't do that. And she was like, it was great. She like called to tell me about it after the doctor's appointment. And I was like, that's awesome, Ma. I love this. And then she was like, but then there was a bad part. And I was like, what was the bad part? She was like, I got on the exam table. The exam table automatically weighed you.
Oh, what the
fuck? And the person
fuck?
Like wrote down the weight number. And she was like, God damn it. Like she was like so frustrated and deflated and
what
mad about it.
What the fuck is this? Also, then why the fuck are they weighing us if they're already weighing us on the exam table? Fuck
well,
you.
Also, I don't think that's like most exam tables necessarily. I don't know that to be true. But I was just like, oh my God, this is
dude.
So ridiculous. But I do love like a lady at 75 being like, oh, I'm done with this shit.
Fuck yes.
Do you have any more that you would like to share?
Well, okay. Should we do the weird one? The one that makes us feel weird?
Oh, what's the one that makes us feel weird?
This is interesting. And I think we may have like different views on this.
Ooh.
So this is also from a clinician named Hannah. She says, hi there. I'm so nervous. I'm such a fan and have listened to every episode of your show. I live, eat, and breathe this work. And yet I also feel like the enemy. I am a dietitian at a weight management clinic.
Ooh.
We have the extremely complex and often conflicted work of hearing patients' desires to lose weight, which range from wanting to be mobile enough to perform daily tasks, get on the floor to be able to play with a child, to look better, not to feel embarrassed, to qualify for knee replacement surgery. It's not my job to judge the why. It's my job to explain if food choices might be related to weight. I am actively training and treating disordered eating because, shocker, lifetimes of dieting have left most of my patients with lasting disordered relationship to food, even if their weight loss results were not so permanent. While it is not my job to convince people why they should or should not want to lose weight, I can explain that obesity medicine proves that individuals cannot control their weight through their food choices. To hear this from a dietitian, I think, can be powerful. I try to help folks find a positive relationship with food that supports their health, not to eat for weight loss because cutting calories doesn't work. I wish that we didn't live in a world that put forth the expectation that thinner is better, but I'm proud of the work that we do to deliver medical care without stigma. And I think this is such an interesting kind of conundrum.
Yeah.
Some people want to lose weight. And so the question is like, can you do that kind of work in a way that is like ethical and in a way that doesn't reinforce stigma and in a way that like gives people what they want, but also doesn't entrench, you know, horrible expectations or judgment of others? And I think this is like a genuinely interesting dilemma.
Yeah. On the whole, this is like maybe not the greatest societal structure that we've got going on here.
Yeah.
We're also not going to like give people a hard time for like having the jobs that they have. It is really powerful to have clinicians say from their clinical experience, this thing you're chasing after is likely not to pan out in the way that you're thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, like, listen. Body autonomy is at the center of fat activism. There is no world in which I'm going to tell anybody else what they should do or not with their body, right? Lose weight, gain weight, any of it, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to give a wholehearted green light to this one because I'm like, yes, I appreciate that you're doing what you can from where you are with what you have. And also, this exists within a system that I am terrified of as a fat person.
I mean, we both worked in NGOs. It's always a question of like, do you work within a system to try to change it from within? Or do you stay outside of the system to, you know, pressure it externally to change?
Mm-hmm.
It's somewhat similar to like my thoughts on like American policing, which is like super fucked up. But also, we're now at this place where, like, no one with any progressive values whatsoever wants to become a cop because it's such a fucking nightmare in there. And it's totally understandable. Like, I wouldn't want to become a cop either. But then what you then have is just a distillation of, like, a bunch of fucking white supremacists.
And
it's like,
yeah.
I would never tell, like, a progressive person to be like, well, you should try becoming a cop. But also, I don't want no progressive people to be cops.
Yeah,
that's
totally.
Really
absolutely.
Fucking bad.
Yeah. I mean, there is harm reduction happening here in some ways, right?
Yeah. I would rather have, like, chill, cool, non-stigmatizing people doing weight loss clinical work than shitty, stigmatizing, fat-phobic, Biggest Loser fucking assholes doing it. But, like, that's a fucked up thing to think, because then that just reinforces the existence of the whole industry, which I don't agree with. But also, we live in a country where it does fucking exist.
No, I hear you. This is like a, we live in an imperfect world, and there are only imperfect actions to address that imperfect world, right?
Yeah.
And again, like, I don't think any of this is bad by any stretch of the imagination, right? Like, I think this is considerably better than, again, like, saying a bunch of shit that isn't true and shining people on, which is like 99% of that industry, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, a question like this makes me really scared. I'm afraid that I'm going to meet this person.
Yeah.
Like, I'm terrified of needing any kind of surgery and having someone go, you have to lose 100 pounds before we'll operate on you.
Yeah.
And that then I'm going to be in eating disorder relapse. And then I'm going to be getting a bunch of compliments that I don't want and that are going to make me feel so much worse.
Yeah.
And that then I'm going to be, like, down a rabbit hole of, like, really, really, really dark brain stuff that I've been down before.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is like a deep, deep, deep fear of mine.
Yeah.
Is like this specific scenario of like needing surgery and having to do all of this shit.
It's really indefensible. My understanding is that there's been like numerous studies on this and it's totally fucking arbitrary.
Yeah.
It's like some doctors are like, you need to be under this BMI. It's other doctors like, you need to be under this BMI, but it's all just fucking finger in the wind. Bullshit.
Yes.
And like it changes clinic to clinic, and it is just like pure stigma.
Yeah. Like I say, like, I understand that this person is like doing the best with sort of the position that they're in and is doing less harmful things than other people who are in that same position. And I would say, I think there's a level of full throatedness that you can reach with this kind of stuff that is like, hey, I'm so sorry. I'm going to tell you something that's really hard. I know your doctor said you can't get this knee replacement until you lose X amount of weight. That's a really hard thing to do.
Yeah.
And statistically, it's like extremely unlikely.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to find you the likeliest path that's the least harmful.
Yeah.
And like, again, I appreciate the telling the truth, but I'm like, God damn it. The bar is in hell.
Yeah. And also, like, you wish this whole thing didn't have to exist.
Totally. Michael.
Aubrey.
Do you want to hear a chaotic good?
Ooh, okay.
And like large scale one.
Is this from President Barack Obama about his wife's initiatives?
This one comes from Kate. We've had so many Kates.
A lot of Kates.
In March, Minnesota passed legislation to provide free school meals to all K-12 students in the state.
Oh yeah, I saw that. Yeah, it's so cool.
I led communications for the campaign, which was driven by an incredible Minnesota hunger nonprofit. This included writing talking points for legislators, creating rebuttals for Republican arguments, developing awareness messaging for the public, and so forth. When I entered the project, one of the big selling points of free school meals was the statistic that food insecure kids are more likely to become obese, quote unquote. Fuck that.
Hell yeah.
In the 18 months I worked on the campaign, I removed all fatness related language and data from public facing campaign materials.
No way. That whips.
Right? Some still snuck in around the edges via legislators to whom I didn't have a direct line or pediatricians whose testimony I couldn't review personally. But there are so, so, so many important reasons that kids should have access to healthy, reliable meals. Having fewer fat people in the world is not one of them.
Love it.
I love it so much.
We don't have to stigmatize people. We can just like give kids free food.
Let's just take that out of the picture. And I would be willing to bet you, I didn't look up the media around this, but I would be willing to bet you that there was like significantly less quote unquote like obesity epidemic framing as a result of the stuff coming straight out of the campaign is not about fatness.
Speaking of which, we also got one from listener Nikki, who is a fat lady who works at a bike advocacy program.
Hey!
I saw the word bike and I got really excited. One of her victories was her boss wanted to do like posters that said burn calories, not carbon.
Ew.
Nikki was like, I don't want that. And then she enlisted her like thin colleagues to be like, let's just like not do like this framing of anything. And then she says her boss was like, oh, actually, like, fine, I'll listen to you this time. But like, you know, calories in, calories out, third law of thermodynamics, blah, blah, blah. I used to work in bike advocacy in Seattle. I'm like a big bike lanes guy. Yeah, I did. I volunteered for an organization here, which was quite good on this stuff, honestly.
That's great.
But it's like all this like bike advocacy, urbanism stuff, like walkable communities is riven with fat phobia.
Yeah.
Walking is good. Biking is good. It's good for fat kids. It's good for thin kids. It's good for all kids. We don't need to throw this whole thing in that it's like it's going to make the kids skinnier. Like you can just remove this entire fucking framing from the debate. Like this is not, it's not a true argument for one thing, because exercise correlates not very well to weight loss anyway. And also like we're just a society with fat kids and we don't need to make fat kids feel like shit. In saying like, hey, wouldn't it be cool if you could bike to school? Wouldn't it be awesome if you didn't have to have your parents drive you everywhere? Like that's a huge thing for independence for kids. We don't have to make fat kids feel shitty about themselves to like talk about the benefits of like making it easier and safer for walking and biking. Like cars are the number one or number two killer of children in this country. Like building better bike lanes and more walkable communities would save thousands of kids' lives a year.
Yeah, totally.
Again, we have great arguments for this stuff.
But Mike, what will those children's BMIs be?
Yeah, exactly. It's just so fucking weird. And like whenever it comes up, I'm like, I'm not like, I try not to be too like jumping down everybody's throat about it because it's fucking everywhere and I would do nothing else. But it's like the whole field just like needs to drop this shit.
Totally and completely. Give low-income people money.
Mm-hmm.
Give people on food stamps cash.
Yeah.
Give diabetic people insulin for free.
And give Mike and Aubrey chaos gremlin lessons as they happen. Ooh. We love it.